to come downstairs for chicken noodle soup.
Yeah, I really like that. I love your chicken noodle soup, Mom.
Good, Jimmy. I'll see you downstairs.
Thanks, Mom.
Hey, everybody. Oh, yes. Look at me, Chris. Look at me. Oh. Yeah.
I don't like to look
get
at you
on this.
When
get
you do
it
this.
On this.
I don't want to look
get
at you in the
this.
Eye.
Give me a yes. Say it, yes.
It's all you.
Say it.
All
say
you.
It.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Paid Search Podcast. My name
there
is Jason Rothman. As always, I'm joined by the great Chris Schaefer. Chris, got to see you yesterday for our Super Patron Hangout. Live call once a month. It was great. And I'm seeing you again today. So how's it going?
Yeah, double dose this week. I'm good. It's good to see you. It's good to speak with you. There is a lot of questions floating around in the Google Ads universe. And right here, what are the chances the two anchors of Google Ads together anchoring down this universe that tries to float around, the entropy in the sky of questions, we're going to bring it down and just ground it and just answer these. That's what we're here for. We're going to answer questions, guys. I tried to paint a word picture for you, but the short answer is we're going to answer questions. Jason, I'm glad to be here. We have smart people with great questions.
It's about your search term. It's about what the person actually typed in Google, making sure that's super relevant. And then it's about what you pay for it, your bid, which you can control if you want to. Should we go home?
That's,
does that answer every
that's
question?
That's it. That's everyone's. Yeah. You hit every single. that is the basic truth. Yeah, that is. But we're going to say that over a 45-minute period with different words. So you just got the short version, but we're going to give you a long version too. But before we do, I want to tell you guys about Opteo. Opteo is an online tool designed for you, the user, to get more done in Google Ads. Let me explain it on a very basic level. It's just a website you go to, right? You log in and it pulls all the data from your Google Ads, whether you have one Google Ads account, 15, 55, 500. It pulls it all down, organizes it into this very nice interface with strategic points of concern based on the level of concern that you need to be looking at. So some will be high priority, some will be medium, some will be low. Things will be color-coded. You'll have graphs, you'll have charts, you'll have arrows pointing up and down. It's very friendly. It's designed to give you information. You can look at the screen and you just download information into your brain because it's there and is designed to give you that in a very efficient way. The Google Ads interface is designed for you to make changes to your campaign. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of buttons and switches, but Opteo is the tool to get things done faster in Google Ads. We have a special offer where you can subscribe and get 8 weeks for free of Google Ads. Very popular. Many of our listeners have tried it. You'll even hear about it in some of these questions. People mention that they're Opteo users and they love it. Try it for free for 8 weeks at opteo.com/PSP2. Use the chat box at the very bottom of the page. Tell them you are a Paid Search Podcast listener. You can get 8 weeks for free. That's twice as long as the other guys. It's our secret. That's opteo.com/PSP2.
Thanks, Chris. And yes, like you were saying, a big, big Q&A today. If you want to send us a question, paidsearchpodcast.com, the Contact Us page. We store these questions up for these episodes, and then we answer them. So send in all your questions there. Also, on our website, paidsearchpodcast.com, there's a menu item, the first 100 episodes. You can purchase any of the first 100 episodes, 25 at a time with a discount or individually. We have a lot of great episodes in those first 100. And then we have our Patreon show. Every single week, we do an after show, talk a little bit about the business of PPC, talk about Google Ads strategies, and just sometimes talk about life in general. $2 a month for audio, a little more for video. And again, it's every single week, so we encourage you to join us over on Patreon. So Chris, with that said, let's get into these questions.
All right. So first, as always, we're going international. We are flying over the ocean. We're going to England to talk to Lena from Kent. Might be Lena, Lena. Either way, I'm going to say Lena. Hey, Chris and Jason. Jason and Chris.
Chris, from what? Kent? Do we say Kent like New York City?
Well,
isn't Kent in the country? Kent, England? I didn't know you were on first name basis with the city of Kent in England.
That's what it's from, Kent, England. I don't know what that is. I don't even know anything about it. What did I get wrong? What did I do?
Well, everyone knows but you.
I don't
You didn't
know.
Say the country. You didn't say the country.
I did too. England.
You said from Kent.
Kent.
As if like, for people over there, it'd be like Lena from Tallahassee.
Oh.
Where is that in the world?
Well, it's United Kingdom. Is that what you're trying to get me to say?
Go ahead with your question.
I don't know.
You go ahead with that question.
Look. I live here in Texas, and that's the only place I ever have to go. So, hey, Chris and Jason, Jason and Chris, I've been listening for a while. Thanks not only for the valuable content, but for keeping me company at work. You've really helped me get through some of the rougher days. I've just signed up for your Patreon and think I'll be upgrading tiers soon. Well, thanks. Appreciate that. My question is there any way to cap spend for one country without making a new campaign? Too many clicks come from India, comparatively, even with a bid adjustment. I don't want to exclude India entirely, as the company does get some business there. It is a global B2B company. So, Jason, can you help her out?
Yeah, Chris, we're the king and queen, and I'll leave that up to people's imagination, simple campaigns. And so I think the only way to do this is either bid adjustments, bidding countries down if you want to keep them in one campaign, or breaking them out into other campaigns. But I'm curious to see your answer. Is there any kind of secret I'm missing, or is it that straightforward?
I mean, there's two things come to mind, and she already mentioned one. Bid down at the location level, you know, like 50%, like something aggressive.
Bid adjustment, yeah.
Yeah, you know, another option is, you know, you could limit the time of day. You know, if you're doing global, you could limit so that it only shows, you know, during part of the day when India would be, you know, getting its most traffic, noontime, afternoon time, stuff like that. So if you're running 24/7, you could cut off whatever, you know, if you're doing global, figure out whatever time frame they would be in for that, whatever time zone you're managing your account in, cut off maybe some of the time when India would be getting its highest peak of traffic. And that would work too. But honestly, I mean, if you really want, this is all kind of beating around the bush. I say just create a new campaign. There's not really another option.
Yeah, we are the last two people in the world to tell someone to create a new campaign, because we like keeping things simple. Mm-hmm. But the reason to create new campaigns is one of the big reasons is locations. And especially when you're dealing with countries as your locations, copy and paste that campaign in the account and then turn off India in the first one and turn off everything except India in the second one, rename it the India campaign, go to editor, copy and paste it real quick, change the locations and then post it. Yep. It's pretty simple.
Boom,
and you can control things. So yeah, I think that's probably the best way to do it when it comes to countries. Because Chris, honestly, we're about making it simple, and bid adjustments and cutting out times a day and time zones, none of that sounds simple. And a lot of it sounds out of your control, because say you bid down India by 80%. Well, maybe the other countries are so high volume, you don't get any India. And then you bid it down by only 40%. But India is a high population, so you still get a ton of India. It's just a lot to try to maneuver with. So I kind of like the idea of different campaigns for at least some of your higher volume countries that you want to control.
Yeah. All right. Next, we're jumping over to Amsterdam. This is Jacob, originally from Belgium. We get a whole history with his message. Hi, guys. First of all, really love the show. I discovered it in July and have just caught up with get this, all episodes, including Patreon. Keep it coming. Jacob does a lot of driving or something. He's got some free time. My question is, I was going through the search terms of an account that rents out minivans, moving vans, etc. When adding a negative keyword for a search query, minivan 14 people, while the max capacity is 9, I was wondering whether I could ever miss any relevant traffic with the appropriate number, considering Google's black box is not always binary. I excluded it as an exact match, but I still don't feel 100% sure. Is there any way to see which queries you didn't show up on because of negative keywords? That's the question he's asking there. Thank you in advance. I'm looking forward to the discussion. P.S. Jason, you mentioned how amazing The Sopranos is, so I checked it out and got hooked. Thanks for that. Okay, first focus on the question, because if you start to... Oh, here we go. He's going to pull his book out. I knew it.
Sorry. I was just reading my Sopranos family cookbook as compiled by Artie Bucco. I just happened to have that sitting around, this deep cut of a Sopranos fan item. So, yeah.
What's the favorite for today?
Question now.
Okay. Okay, good.
Well, don't tell me to move along and then ask me an open-ended question, Chris. We're going to have tuna salad with green beans and tomatoes.
Okay. Simple. What was the first country. What was that first one?
Dr. Melfi. Take it easy. Okay. Something you don't know about. Jennifer Melfi.
Sure. Oh, I know. I've seen it. She was in the very first episode. She had a rough time. Go ahead.
You know those things where you're like really into something and someone makes light of it and then they try to converse with you about it? And then you get angry because you're like, I'm not even going to entertain this because you're not.
You're going to get offended.
Realm as me when it comes to this. I don't want to talk anything about Sopranos with you ever again. So don't.
Okay. Don't ever mention board games.
I can't. A lot of ways that can go. So this question, So Jacob was the maximum capacity is 9, and he saw a search term come in that said minivan 14 people. And so he added an exact match negative and was talking about Google's black box, and we're not sure of everything. Here's one thing we're sure of, or we can kind of be sure of. With negative keywords, they definitely err on the side of only blocking what you put in there. Mm-hmm. So if you put in minivan 14 people exact match, you probably will still show up on minivans 14 people, plural on minivans.
Because plural, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or minivan 14, like you, whatever is the search that's not that exact search, you'll probably still show up on.
Or just a misspelling. It could be minivan 14 papal, you know, and they're going to show it because they misspelled it.
Because you blocked it exact match and because they err on the side of letting your ad show on queries because it helps them generate revenue. And then the other side of the coin is, well, it helps people get quality traffic and you don't block off your traffic. So if the max capacity is 9, what I would do, Chris, is I would block either phrase or broad match negative. Either one works for me, but I would block the spellings and also the word. So 10 and then the digits 1 and 0, I would block 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, all the way up to maybe like 25 or something. And that way, any search that includes those numbers, you're going to block. The only thing is, like, if you have some kind of pricing that's like $99 or something, you want to be careful. But if you're trying to block, my point is, don't be afraid to go broad match. Don't be afraid to go phrase match on these negatives. And if you think you're going to just lock it down with one exact match negative, you're probably still going to show up on some irrelevant stuff. So, Chris, what do you think about that?
The only thing I would add to that is he asked, you know, is there a way to see what you don't show up on? And no, there is no way. Google will, I'll stake my reputation on it. Google will never allow us to see what we don't show up on for negative because that would be a breach of a ton of information. You could abuse that system to no end to just start putting negative keywords, to just start sampling keyword volume without paying a dime on anything. So no, you cannot see what your negative keyword blocks.
I mean, you can do some preview tool searches. If you're in the area, you can do some searches. But that has other factors like the time of day, your schedule, your budget, limited by budget and stuff. But Chris, I'm sure if you go to the Paid Search Podcast YouTube channel or you go to our website and you search negative keywords, we probably have some episodes on or some questions and answers specifically about negative and how we approach that. But what percent of your negatives are broad match versus phrase match and exact? Upwards of 90% of them?
Yeah, 90%.
So you are really not scared of overblocking your stuff.
No.
Because you think if I put in a broad match negative, it's basically going to be treated as almost an exact match. Would that be fair?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or is that going too far?
You know, it's if I put the word shoe, I can show up on anybody misspelling the word shoe. I can show up on anybody saying shoes. I can show up on people saying slipper.
Oh, no, not blue shoe.
Yeah, not blue shoe, blue shoe. But yeah. I can show up on slipper. I can show up on, you know, anything. As long as the word shoe is not in there, S-H-U-E, I am not going to show up on it. So I almost...
S-H-U-E, yeah.
Yeah.
Shoot. You almost misspelled that, yeah.
I know. Why did I pick such a weird word to spell in front of everyone? That was risky. I could have really screwed that up, but I pulled through.
Hold on. Spell it?
No. We're moving on. We're going to Maine. We're coming back to the United States.
Hold on, Chris. I got to correct one thing I said. I said broad match negative can be thought of as exact match. That's going too far because shoe would block blue shoe. It's more to think of it as broad match negative. I think you can think of it as basically phrase match because as long as that word is in the search, old school phrase match, as long as that word's in the search, you'll be blocked.
Yeah, yeah. Sam from Wells, Maine. Sam sent a long message. So Sam, I'm going to abbreviate it a bit. But thank you for all that you shared. And he was very complimentary of the show, but I'll keep it short. Endless gratitude to the Paid Search Podcast. This is by far my favorite podcast ever. It is informative and humorous. Okay, now he gets into a thing. He says he's nervous. Okay, he's nervous because he can bring up something, and I want to answer something. I want an answer from you about this. He says, I found it super weird the other day when I was listening to the landing page checklist episode that Chris brought up, how he liked running landing pages that seemed slow through a page speed testing. I remember talking about that. And then Jason,
so do I,
totally crapping on that like it was a waste of time. This, for a tiny moment, tainted my opinion of Jason as the greatest Google Ads manager, also the smartest man on earth. I was soon over it, but wanted to reach out anyway. I heard Jason say many times that he does everything he can to look out for a good quality score, but if a landing page experience influences quality score, how can he not care about landing page performance tests? Explain yourself. I agree. It kind of shocked me too. Explain yourself.
You're bringing up old stuff, Chris.
What?
We'll get to that. But I think at the time I was trying to convey that a page is either slow or it's not. And if you want to get hung up on stuff like this little tag or that tag or whatever, you're not thinking about the right things with the landing page. Because with the landing page, you should be thinking about, is it fast? Yes, you should think about that. But it should be a very quick conversation like, okay, does it load fast or not? It's pretty simple. And then you got to move on to relevant content. And you got to move on to making a connection with the search user and proving to them and convincing them that you actually are the business that can help them. My point is, a lot of people think you can just throw up a landing page and it says the right words and it has the form up high and all that, and you're going to get conversions. And my whole point is that you have to go deeper than that, and you have to prove to the person you're exactly what they're looking for. So an example, moving companies, instead of using stock photos or bad photos or anything, use real pictures, real videos of your uniformed employees with your trucks doing real moves, proving to that person in the very small amount of time you have their attention to get the conversion, and focus on that. And forget about this 32 versus 37. And the other thing I've seen so many times when I use that tool, I'll put in some of the biggest websites in the world, some of the biggest ones, and they get bad scores, even though they load perfect for me. That's one of my beefs with it. It's like you're going to go down this rabbit hole of stuff that just does not matter and does not affect the performance. And as a Google Ads manager, you can't control anyway because this is all website stuff. So if us like us and it smells like us and it sees like us, you know how people go into that little thing. If it acts like a duck and blah, 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 Don't waste my time. By the way, I was thinking about this, Chris. We can talk about it on Patreon. If you waste my time, you are the devil. That's how I've been thinking about it lately. Right. You are literally Satan.
Wow.
If you waste my time. So I'll expand on that in Patreon.
Okay.
But if you're going to tell me a website is fast and you're going to put it in that tool and you're going to say, oh, but it's only getting a 37 and it's yellow instead of green. To me, as a Google Ads manager, that's wasting my time because I'm not going to figure out how to get the little image file a little bit friendlier for this tool. Even though the page loads, I got to focus on connection and proving to that person that they should fill out the lead form because you can help them. So it's more of like a little bit of an exaggeration to make a point. And also it's a little bit of like just history I've had to deal with where people get hung up on that. And I'm putting in the fastest, biggest websites in the world and they're getting bad scores. So that's kind of my beef with it. That's all.
Okay. By the way, Sam says, P.S. I'm an Opteo user. So there we go. There's another one. Gary from Thailand just joined Patreon. You guys get, I love this. You guys get more bandwidth than Netflix now at my house. Also, Chris, please add me to your YouTube premium account. Great gift idea.
You are a grifter.
That's adding funny.
People to YouTube. You can add five people. You can add like up to four or five people. I bought it recently. I think we talked about it on Patreon.
We talked
about it. Oh, no. I hope Cynthia doesn't listen to this because I have to like change accounts because she's already on YouTube TV and I can't get her over to YouTube Premium until I change accounts and I keep pushing it down my list. And it's like The Sopranos. Are you going to push the home inspector, Tony? Yeah, I'll get on it. He doesn't get on it. And it's a real problem in their marriage, Chris. And then she has to redo the lumber and it doesn't work. And she has dreams. And then Christopher moves in the house. Oh. And then Paulie Walnuts drives all over the yard. And then Christopher's driving with Tony late at night. And they're playing that band who I forget. And he's got the hat on, Cleaver. And then he's looking at me, looks high. And then they crash. And then oh, no spoilers. I love that show.
Wow. Okay, moving on. Here's a question from Gary. He says, am I correct in thinking that Google Analytics search queries are in fact a better reflection of actual search terms for a Google Ads campaign? If so, is the issue of Google still not showing these sessions as clicks a glitch? Or maybe more about them trying to hide potentially crappy long tail searches that eat up budget. So it's a bit of Gary's got a little bit of a theory behind some evil maniacal scheme, you know, happening. What do you think?
We're like in the Hunger Games times, Chris, where like we all had this alliance. Like Gary manages Google Ads, his own account, other people, whatever he's doing, we're managing accounts. We used to get on the show and help people. Like, yeah, I think in analytics it's this and that. No, now we're back to like I'm gonna get this baseball bat, I'm gonna hit you in the kneecaps, and then I'm gonna run and try to find the food, because it's every man for himself out there. I don't know what they're doing with analytics search terms. Like, I don't know what's going on with your account. I don't know what's going on with these sessions and all that kind of stuff. Like, good luck to you, but I'm dealing with my own issues, losing 40% search terms, trying to tie it back to analytics and figure it out. So I'm trying to figure it out myself, and I really don't have energy to be helping you. So it's doggy dog out here, Chris.
Oh, my gosh. You know, you do have a podcast where people send in questions. Then you say, what the frick are you sending me questions?
I know, but we're being squeezed from the top, Chris. What do you want me to say, bro? Like, I don't know about – how can I answer that? Like, I don't know what they're doing with those 40%. I don't know which ones they're taking. I don't know what's showing up in analytics or not. I like the idea of going there. It's one idea I hadn't shared. But this is the point in the movie where it's every man for himself. So,
yeah,
spend all your time in analytics trying to pull it together. I don't know. But I will tell Gary this. They're not better search terms. I don't believe that in analytics or Google Ads. It was my idea to look in there to see if you can find extra search terms. Some people are reporting you can. Pretty much every time I've done it, I just see the same search terms. And I don't know about the deal with them not showing up as clicks in Google Analytics or anything like that. Another thing you got to remember with Google Analytics, sometimes it takes time for some data to flow in going both ways. But the point is, you look at them in analytics, and if you see any different search terms in there, then you can just add them as keywords to your Google Ads account. So if you want to go to Google Analytics and look at your search queries that come in from Google Ads, you can take those and review it just like you do the search terms report in Google Ads and use it to find negatives, use it to find new keywords. Just go to both places if you want to.
Yeah.
That's a pretty fair answer, Chris.
To answer the question, no, I don't think that Google's purpose behind not showing us the additional search terms is somehow hiding crappy searches. You know, if they wanted to do that, they would just take search terms away entirely. I mean, they could do that. There's really no purpose that search terms give us beyond that additional depth of information. So if they wanted to hide it, they could just take it away. So I don't have any kind of...
And by the way, maybe we should all consider just for a moment that their press release was accurate. I mean, we should at least consider it. They mm-hmm. took away some search queries for privacy reasons.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just that. Maybe. I mean, everyone jumps to conspiracy theories and all that, but I don't know. We'll see. We're still kind of learning. The problem I've been having with this is it's too easy to get back in the old search term mindset where you just look at your search terms, you add negatives, you look for negative new keywords, and then you're like, okay, looks good. And it's kind of too easy to forget, whoa, I'm missing 40% of my search terms, maybe more. Let's think about the conversion rates and am I showing up on stuff I wouldn't want to be. Let me try to backtrack and figure out what those are, even though I can't see them. Are you kind of forgetting that all that's going on because it's just such a habit to jump in there?
Yeah, one keyword or one search term matters a whole lot more than it used to. If I think about it, like if there is some type of conspiracy happening, it's going to backfire on Google because now the managers are freaking out over single impression, single click search terms because now we're like, oh, that could represent another 15 searches, you know, another 15 clicks. And suddenly now we're blocking stuff because we don't know. The mystery has turned us into, you know, fearful managers who start blocking at a much stronger rate now, you know? So that's, I don't know. That's what I feel like a lot of people do is they have to take them much more seriously now since we have less.
It definitely is it's a new ballgame. That's for sure. It's a new skill set I need to develop to manage search terms because you're looking at search terms, but then you got to remember you're looking at search terms you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
And still trying to figure that out.
We are jumping to Canada, Manitoba, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. David, I read that backwards. It's kind of cool when you read it backwards, kind of like Bond, James Bond. Boys. Been doing PPC for 15 plus years. Really appreciate your fully transparent approach to your podcast. All right, we got an old timer here. Keep the faith and remember manual clicks forever. Oh man, he's ringing the bell. He knows how to get me going. My question
here is... Here comes the hard question.
Yeah.
Buttered me up.
Yeah. My question is, have you noticed B2B competitor phone numbers showing up in the search terms report? Let me rephrase that. He's being very specific here. Let's just say his question is, have you noticed phone numbers showing up in search terms report? Being triggered by general keyword terms. So let's assume he's talking about broad match. This campaign happens to be an auto dealer. Do we have to start putting phone numbers in the negative keyword list since I don't want to show up when people are searching for a competitor's business name? Anyway, appreciate your thoughts and feedback.
Well, we have our summer or fall of 2020 answer. And then we have our post summer fall 2020 answer. Pre summer fall 2020, when we used to see all search terms, the answer would be no, you don't have to go preemptively add a bunch of competitors' phone numbers. I mean, maybe it would be a good idea if you're running pure broad to add some competitor names, big competitors as negative keywords up front, because you're probably going to show on them if you run pure broad if they're high volume. But I would never think to run to add preemptively negative phone numbers. But in the post, so the point would be you wait till you see them because they're probably rare. But in the post 2020 world of taking away 40% of our search terms, technically you could be showing up on them. It's kind of that thing we were just talking about. So yeah, if you got time to do it, do it. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I'm not going to be doing it. I don't think it's worth it. I'm not really a fan of busy work like that when I can tell absolutely no advantage to it, unless it's a problem. Unless I actually see it in the search terms, I'm not going to just preemptively do it. What I think is happening, David, is it's very likely if you have a broad keyword that there's a string of searches that you couldn't see. Searches that were that were within the geographic location you were targeting. They were very good searches related to your keywords. You could have been eligible for any of them, but he happened to search one little bit different way, and Google used its black box of mystery to determine, okay, this is relevant. I know the search itself wasn't, but because you had a broad keyword, boom, you showed up for it. And proof of that, don't consider whether it's a phone number or not. Consider how far Broadmatch can go. You could put the word shoe as a single word Broadmatch keyword and show up for, you know, pretty dresses. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of crazy things you can show up for, and Google's interpretation can be very loose. So I think it's a matter of Google using the initiative that someone's giving by typing, you know, used car sales near me. What's the best used car place? Where can I get the best prices? And they happen to type a phone number, then you showed up on that one. I think that's the case.
So you think some of this is, it's not just the fact that he's running a pure broad keyword, but it's the fact that Google seems to be getting more and more audience based with their search, mm-hmm. and knowing mm-hmm. what they know about the search user, and that person search for, say it's a Honda dealership, Honda Accord's near me, Honda dealership's near me, and then they search for a competitor's phone number, and this person's running ads on Honda Accord Broadmatch. Google said, yep, they're in the Honda category this week, and let's loosen up their searches we can show to this user.
Yep.
You think that's going on?
I think it, oh yeah, absolutely. I think the evidence is in the broad keywords.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I think this is my main takeaway from today's Q&A, Chris, is that search is changing because they're going more and more, maybe like individual results to the user, because they know more and more about the user. They're having to kind of go a little more in the direction of privacy. And maybe that's why we're not getting so many search terms. But as an advertiser, it's changing the management, Chris, because you got to think about not just the data that you're able to see in the account. You got to think about the way Google's approaching individualized search results. This is all new to 2020, Chris, or at least it's all accelerated.
Yeah, very quickly. That's true. Accelerated. It's probably true. We are jumping over to Belgium. Jacob in Belgium. Hi guys, love the show and the Patreon. And he says, to which everyone should subscribe.
Chris, did you write these at the beginning of the questions? Because a lot of them mention Patreon.
No.
They haven't in the past.
I do not edit anything. They are really saying this.
Okay, that's, but will you at least give me this? Because this is what we do on the show. We just call you out on your BS, okay? Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. It's a couples counseling session.
Right.
Don't you ever throw this back at me, Chris, okay? This is your session. Will you at least admit to this? So you're reading every question today. You prep the show, you're reading every question.
Mm-hmm.
When we split off the questions, you always lean in the direction of not reading people's praise, not reading the small talk, going right to the question, and you don't allow me to bask in the glory. Mm-hmm. But when you read all the questions, you leave everything green and you say, read the whole thing. Will you at least admit that seems to be going on today? It's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Look at what you've highlighted green.
It's because I read a little faster. I prefer my reading method to yours. Sometimes I feel like you kind of drag it out, so I have to shorten it for you. I'm sorry. To read a little slow for me.
I would just love if we could do a simulation and see what the numbers would be like on the show if I wasn't around. I would just love that. Because you have this fantasy in your head that we could just cut to the chase, go right to the bedroom, and get all the answers done within 7-minute episodes. And then I bring the other stuff to the show. I just wish you could see how much of a failure this show would be without me.
Oh, there's no question. It would be a dry...
Well, then stop acting like you don't understand that.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Read the question.
I don't even know which one I'm... Okay. Jacob from Belgium.
Gosh. Subscribe to Patreon. PatreonsPodcast.com.
Yes.
Click on the link that says Patreon.
There you go. I'm running Google Ads campaigns...
Put that in this question.
I'm running Google Ads campaigns for an HR services company. The budget is there. The volume is there. The website is great. The leads are there. But the quality score is not there at all. I'm constantly getting 3 or 1 out of 10 on super, and this is his phrase, this is his words, on super relevant keywords, phrase and search. I think that's the contesting point. No matter how much I bid to increase the CTR and conversion rate, Google seems to keep punishing these keywords. Do you have any idea what would be causing these terrible quality scores? Before I throw it to you, Jason, I'm going to say my answer is go back and listen to the episode a couple weeks ago where it talks about rethinking keyword match type. Go listen to that episode. That is the answer. It's way too long, but the short answer is you need to rethink what relevancy means and stop pressing so much because specifically you said phrase and exact. Rethink your phrase and exact in a way of using broad match, long tail, rather than using actual match type. So that may sound confusing, a little complex, but go back and listen to that episode and you'll get it.
So could it come down to it in a lot of situations, Chris? We think certain exact and phrase match searches mean exactly what we want them to mean, but Google sometimes thinks they're a little bit different, or Google doesn't understand them as much, the system. And so because of that, it doesn't think it needs to serve ads up on them as much, and it's a little confused. Yeah.
I think it's a cascading effect. Okay? Let's think of it this way. At the very top, if Google doesn't understand, if the click-through rate expectation or a click-through rate experience is very low, that means this initially Google doesn't understand what the term is. So how are they going to understand how the landing page experience is? How are they then going to understand that ad relevance is going to be anything good? I think it's a cascading effect. If you choose a keyword that has multiple meanings, it's very obscure, it doesn't have an action term in it, it's going to be a cascading effect of bad, bad, bad. Every aspect of quality score is going to suffer because you've picked keywords that have no context.
And I think sometimes it's not even Google system not understanding search. I think it's sometimes the advertiser wishing that the meaning behind the search was more weighted towards their desire of what it was supposed to mean than the actual weighting in general. Maybe only 10 or 15 or 20% of people who do the search actually are searching it the way you want it to be searched. And it could just be a very ambiguous search in terms of, like, it could mean a lot of different things to a lot of people. And when that's the case, it's hard for Google system to serve up relevant ads because relevant means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Chris, one of the biggest skill sets Google Ads Manager can have, an advertiser can have, is the humility to understand that just sometimes certain keywords are going to have bad quality scores, and to accept that and to focus on the regular data and conversion rates and cost per conversion, all that, and move on and accept you're going to have bad quality score keywords inside of your account, even though you're a great Google Ads Manager. And then also having the adventurous outlook to go beyond those keywords and think, okay, that's what I'm going to get from these perfect keywords for me. How can I kind of, like, go wider and figure this out? So it takes humility, but it also takes some creativity to get around these situations. But if people are out there wondering, yes, you can do everything right and still find yourself in some situations with 1-to-3s.
Yep.
And it's tough. It doesn't happen a lot, but it's a tough and real thing.
Yeah. All right. We are going to, this might be a first, Iceland. Can you say the name of that city for me, Jason?
Well, number one, it is misspelled just in the pacing there, but it is... I just changed the spelling, Chris, for you there.
Oh, let's that's worse. Each, no, I don't know. Please, no. Please, no.
No, I'm just going to try it, and then I'm going to hear it and see how it actually is pronounced. Okay. So I'm going to say Reykjavik, because I think that's how people have said it before. And then let me do a little pronunciation
thing on
Google.
I think it's Reykjavik, you know, like a kind of like your Reykjavik kind of thing.
I'm going to say Revnik. And... Reykjavik.
Reykjavik. Oh, wow. Reykjavik. Okay. Reykjavik.
See, okay. The thing about Iceland, Chris, it's actually warm there and green. And mm-hmm. then Greenland is
icy,
cold, and iced over.
Isn't that crazy?
And a lot of people don't know that. But when you watch the Mighty Ducks and you have a shared cultural experience, because back in the day, Americans watched movies together. We watched TV shows together. We celebrated the same holidays. We watched the same movies. We had a common kind of country. And now everyone's in their phone. They're in their silo on their newsfeed, and we're coming apart at the seams. What are we going to do, Chris? How can I communicate with the younger generation where we don't have these shared movie experiences about Iceland and Greenland? But you know what? For everyone out there that thinks we're coming apart, we're still the number one country. And if we've got to drag down everybody else, we will. But we will always be number one. So I don't care what the capital of Iceland is. I don't care how to pronounce it. It's called the United States of America. It's called New York, Philadelphia, New York, Washington, D.C. It's our capitals. Washington, D.C., the current capital. And basically the capital of the world.
Just in case you guys didn't know, United States fails, we're going to bring you all down with us.
Relatively, we're always going to be number one. That's what people need to understand.
Yeah, even if everyone...
And if they just would accept it, we'd all be better off.
That's great. Okay.
And if you want to be better off, help us rise up, because we're always going to be number one. So send us your resources.
Yeah.
Send us your best people. We'll rise up. Everyone can rise up.
You can rise up too.
But we're always going to be number one.
That's right. Yeah.
So send us your resources.
So I love how we have this whole speech.
Red, white, and blue, 50 stars, 13 stripes. And by the way, I want to thank the international audience for today's questions. A lot of questions from overseas.
We're just crapping on the whole world. And we've read like most of the questions from outside the U.S. That's great. You guys, I have to give something to our audience. They continue to listen, I swear. And every time we just talk about the United States, about how great it is.
Well, wouldn't they, if they lived here, Chris? Can you imagine just you're free, you're born, and then you're just free, and you can do whatever you want, become whatever you want. Mm. And even the pursuit of happiness is written into your constitution. And it's not like a constitution that changes every 10 years. This thing's been around for 200 plus years.
Tack.
You're born free, Chris, and you can become whatever you want.
Tack.
And I was just born here, and I didn't do anything, but I was born here, and I'm very fortunate for that.
I'm trying to start.
And I appreciate that.
Tack. Hello, Chris and Jason. Thank you for being great, especially you, Chris. I did not add that. He said that. My question today is about awareness campaigns. Just delete it. Jason, put the question back up. You can't just delete.
Well, then reread it without that "especially you, Chris" line, because I don't like that. And if it's a joke, it's not funny.
Thank you, Chris, and Jason, especially Jason.
No, Chris. No, I don't need to be buttered up. I just can't see "especially you, Chris" there.
Okay.
So I'm going to delete that.
Okay.
Read the question, as I've been saying. Read the question.
Hello, Chris and Jason. Thank you for being great. My question today is about awareness campaigns. We all know Google is great for lead generation and sales for products people are searching for. But what are your strategies for getting in front of potential customers that customers are not yet aware of the brand you are trying to promote? I have clients that ask if Facebook or Instagram display outweighs Google Display Network. I hate Facebook and Instagram. I like tack. So I would rather stick with Google Display. What are some strategies you use for an awareness campaign? Now, tack, I don't know if you're a patron or not, but I will be answering a question like this on our super patron level, which is our highest tier. Still super affordable. Sounds intimidating, but it's still pretty affordable. It's $49. And I'll be doing a video on this because this is a specific topic I get a lot. But to answer your question, there are some very specific ways that you can build very complex display campaigns in Google Ads. There's a lot. With when it comes to search, you can do keywords. And you can do maybe some audience layering, which I recently did a video on Patreon as well for that too. But there's a lot more in display. Topics, demographics, audiences, custom in-market audiences, custom topics, keywords, device type, networks. I mean, all kinds of ways that are layered that get much more complex. So the complexity, we could do a whole show, you know, the paid search display podcast. We could do a whole podcast about all the display stuff. Yeah, there's tons of stuff. Some strategies, you know, just initially to give you some ideas, you know, you can use audiences, multiple types of audiences. You can use content, which would be topics or keywords. And then fourth, you could do a combination of those. And the combinations is where the creativity really happens. You can create in-market audiences plus a specific topic and be able to, you know, let's say you sold a dog product. You could target dog lovers as an audience, an affinity audience, and then target the topic of dogs. And now you are targeting ads to people that are reading about dogs and they have a interest or an affinity for dogs, you know, for the past week, month, years, whatever. That's the kind of awareness display power that's in the Google Ads system that doesn't get talked up a lot. If you're going for awareness, absolutely. I think awareness is just as powerful. I don't know that it's better than Facebook and Instagram, but I don't think it should be discounted at all. I think it's extremely powerful.
Chris, I think next week's episode, and I'll plan it, and you can, I'll toss it, I'll throw the pitch, you can hit it out of the park, how to grow awareness with Google Ads, specifically okay. when someone's never been to your website. So we'll take out the easy answer, the remarketing, and we'll really go deep on it. But I guess what I'd like to add to that, Chris, is take out the discussion of Facebook and Instagram, because it's their platform is so different.
Yeah.
And
apples and oranges.
I mean, if you're going to, I'm not here to just butter people up. So if you're going to say, hey, I need an awareness campaign, where should I go? Facebook or Instagram or Google Ads display? I'm going to say Facebook and Instagram. Like, I've just seen it work more in that. That said, I don't do a lot of this kind of stuff in Google Ads. I do a lot of search, but their system is just so powerful. And so focused on that
engagement,
I would say
the engagement level just is much higher.
Okay.
I would say
he's being a little smart, but Chris, I've advertised on Facebook. I mean, there's some powerful tools over there. So I would just take it out of the discussion and don't try to compare it because it's just different. And once you kind of get past that hurdle, then the question is, well, can you do awareness with Google Ads? And like Chris was saying with some of those display strategies, yes, but here's for anyone that says you can't. Everyone, unless you change over to YouTube Premium like I have and you don't have to deal with ads anymore, everyone can remember ads on YouTube and those companies you've never heard of, those people you had never heard of, and then all of a sudden you're seeing their YouTube ads all the time and you know them 100% now. So 100% you can grow awareness from zero to something. And some people have grown it through specifically YouTube ads to multi-million dollar businesses. I can think of some like marketer guys who just completely knocked it out of the park with that. And you definitely can. So there's definitely strategies. The final thing I'll say is maybe outside of the YouTube, but Google Ads display, it can be freaking hard.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of work to kind of discover that gem strategy that's actually going to work. It is doable, but it's hard. Chris, again, it's just you did the questions this week. You highlighted them, so you just went crazy with the amount of questions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we only have two left, so I say let's just do it. Let's make this
the
biggest Q&A ever, and let's get
I'm exhausted.
Through it,
so. Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you guys about Opteo, opteo.com/PSP2. If you haven't tried it, you're missing out. I promise you, I'm not lying when I talk, when we do our patron meetups for our higher tier patrons. Everybody on there has tried it. It's the kind of thing when you reach a point when you need creativity at, you know, you need someone to do an audit for you. This is the kind of thing where every time a system goes in, a third-party system, not a Google system, but a third-party system comes in and looks at your stuff. It you know, and it tells you, hey, did you notice that this ad is outperforming a lot? You know, maybe you should pause this one and write a new one. You know, that's the kind of stuff. Do you think about that? Do you think about that on your own? Come on, be honest. No, you don't. Most people don't think about changing ad copy. It gets ignored a lot. That's the kind of thing you can do in Opteo. Opteo.com/PSP2. 8-week free trial. Boom, bada bing. Leonard. Aha, I think I got it. Leonard from San Diego, California. Hi, Jason and Chris. He put it in that order. See, I didn't change everything. I have been listening for quite a while. Big fan out here in sunny San Diego. I put your podcast on for our drive to work. It gets me pumped up for my day, and my 4-year-old son, Oliver, really gets a laugh at the Jimmy intro. Aw, you make the little kids laugh, Jason. All right, I went to look. I have a couple things he mentioned about doing an audit on a new campaign, okay? And what he basically asked is, he said he went to look at the conversions and it was filled with crap, just smart map directions, website visits, time on site. So I imagine, you know, he's looking at this list of conversions. There's like probably 400 conversions and he's like, wow, this is killing it. And then he realizes once he goes to the conversions tab, this is junk. There's a couple good ones in here, but the rest of it is junk. And everything's tracking. So basically what he wants to know is there a way to filter out the conversion I want to see when I'm looking at the historical data on the account? So I got, he's looking at 90 days, 120 days, whatever. And he wants to know which campaigns, which ad groups, which keywords, maybe even which search terms have driven those good conversions, not the junk. Jason.
So I'm going to steal your classic. One thing you probably didn't even think of it for this answer because it's not as related, and then I want to hear your take, and then I'll finish it up. But anytime, because I've learned from the great Chris Schaefer, anytime someone wants to start talking about surface level conversion numbers that look great and then finding crap on the inside, always check your keywords, always check your search terms. Are there any broad or loose, broad match modified keywords that actually had you showing up on brand search terms that were driving up conversions? So I learned that kind of check from the great Chris Schaefer. So with that, Chris, I'll throw it to you for your answer, and then I'll see if I have anything to add.
Okay, so as far as I understand the question, I think what you're looking for, the solution that you're looking for, is you need to go to the campaign level, the ad group level, the keyword level, and the search term level, and use the segment button and go to conversion and then conversion action. And when you do that, let's say you're at the campaign level, suddenly all these little subcategories will drop down underneath each campaign. And when you do that, you'll be able to see, okay, campaign A got 30 conversions, but 10 of them were, you know, website visits. Another 15 were, you know, this, and then just a couple more were actual leads, phone calls, something like that. You will actually be able to determine which one of those brought in that conversion data. That's what you want to see. When you talk about filtering, it's not a filter, it's more of a segmentation. So use that segment feature at each of the levels of your account and slowly filter down to figure out which ones were truly the winners. But you definitely have a mess on your hands because he, as he mentions in his email, I mean, they're spending like $20,000 a month. So I imagine the volume is pretty high.
Yeah, Chris, I am not a fan of doing a lot of exports with Google Ads and looking at Google Ads data in like a spreadsheet or anything like that. But in this case, when you pop open that segment button, if you have a lot of conversion actions that were getting conversions, it expands your page like a ton. So every single keyword is going to have a group of conversion names under it, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So that might be a time where I really do kind of like look at the data and then just go to a spreadsheet or go to a doc and just type in like, okay, this keyword for the exact kind of conversions that I like and want to focus on got this kind of cost per conversion. And when you rebuild or optimize going forward, you can focus on those keywords. But yes, segmenting out is the big thing. There was one more. Oh, one other idea, Chris, is if you have a little budget to play with, if you have a month or two to buy yourself, go to the conversion page, turn off the conversions you don't like, and or don't include the conversions you don't like as yes, including conversions. Don't include them in conversions. Then going forward, they won't show up in the conversion column, the soft conversions you don't like. And if you can buy yourself a month or two, maybe at a little bit lower budget, just instead of having to do all that back research looking back, you can just look at what you get over the next month or two after you've cleaned up your conversion data. And maybe sometimes, Chris, I know it costs a little money to run for a month or two, but sometimes that's a better thing to do than go back through all those segmented lines and try to figure it out. Mm-hmm. You like that idea?
Yeah, I do. That's a good point. All right, last one. Jace from the great city of Regina,
Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan.
How do you not know that?
I do. I just can't say it. Saskatchewan. Got it.
Mother was born there. Saskatchewan, Canada.
Wow. Okay.
Grandfather grew up in Toronto, and he got his first doctor job out in Saskatchewan.
I think you told us this before. About that. All right. He says, hey, guys, this show is great. I particularly like the episode about the low-risk, high-reward method of discovering diamonds in the rough. Thank you. I'm glad you like that. My question is about negative keywords. I'm managing a big account, and the CEO of the company loves when I go deep. On the search terms, that is, to find negative keywords, even on one impression and one click search terms. This is exhausting, and it takes so much time out of my day. How do you guys work fast to find negatives and not spend entire days looking for thousands of search terms? Thanks so much. So, Jace, thank you for that. Excellent use of commas. I try and pause when you use the commas. Okay.
Chris, I am the smartest person in the world. I am thinking about modifying that to the wisest, because obviously there's people that can probably do long division in their head better than me.
Okay.
So I'm humble enough to think maybe I need to change that wording around. But sometimes it takes me a few minutes to process things. So I'm going to think about this.
Okay.
And I'd like to get your answer first.
I have an excellent answer. I think you're going to like it. I know Jace is going to like it because it's going to save him time. Here's the thing. The solution is go, of course, to the search terms. Best solution is typically if it's a moderately spending campaign. Well, actually, he says a big account. Okay, so it says a big account. So go 30 days. You know, hopefully that's several hundreds of keywords and clicks. Go to the search terms and filter out. Go create a filter. Type in search terms and say does not include, and then put an important word into that does not include filter. So for example, if you're selling shoes, put the word shoe in there, or shoes, and do this one at a time. You know, if you're selling cars, put the word car or truck or, you know, a brand or something like that. And what will happen, boom, it'll filter all this stuff out that is, and the only thing that's left is the stuff that does not match that, at least that core word. And immediately you filter down and found a minority of traffic that is likely going to be something that is worth blocking as a negative keyword. That it, because the problem is not, what you're doing is you're making it the hardest way. You're going through bulks of keyword data line by line. The easiest thing to do is use the filter to immediately eliminate certain words that you know are going to be good. And if it includes that, then it's probably okay. And then the opposite is true. You know, if you find that some things are not useful, like the word cheap or discount or coupon or something like that, filter to only those words and look what other words they're using in there. And then start adding those as negative keywords. And that's the fastest way I've found to add negative keywords when I need to do it in bulk.
Chris, I like your answer. I'm just going to take your answer and just, you know, go further than you went with it.
Okay.
I don't think you should go 30 days. I think if Jace up there in Saskatchewan, the first part of the answer is yes. The answer to your question on how do I find these gems without spending a ton of time on it, it's through mastering the filter functions. And it's not just does a search term include or not include a word. Also, you got to look at search terms that are added versus none. So then you can tell the system like, yeah, any keyword I already have, don't show me. So you're trying to whittle things down, master that filter area, and then break that sucker up more than 30 days. Look back at the past year. Look back at the past 10 years, because the more you can kind of control your filter and go, okay, I found this search term that has this one word in it that seems interesting, and it only seems like there was one search term in the last 30 days from it, but it's a very interesting part of the search term, that word. Take that word that's not going to have a lot of volume, filter for search terms that include that word, maybe that you're not targeting, so none versus added kind of thing, and then break that sucker up like over the last 2 or 3 years, and you're going to have a manageable amount of data because there's not going to be a ton of search terms that had it, but you'll get a ton, you'll get a ton of good ideas. So master the filters, like Chris was saying, but the more you master them, the more you can kind of lock things down and make things manageable, the more you can go back in time and be able to process a large amount of time data, because it won't be as many search terms because you're filtering it. So the answer is in filters. I think that's, can't go wrong there.
All right, guys, that is it. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We are going to now jump into our Patreon show, which is for the audio listeners is $2, for video is $4. There's a higher tier level where you can get even more. So thank you for listening on the main podcast. We're going to jump into that. If you would like to, be sure and look us up, paidsearchpodcast.com, to join us for that. And we'll be back next week.